Hi, I'm Sol Trumbo from the Economic Justice Department of the Transnational Institute. For more information, go to tni.org. As a part of our work on economic governance in Europe, we have organized a series of debates with the European Commission. In relation with the Pact of Competitiveness being discussed by the European leaders, we set on June 26th a debate with the title Competitiveness versus Democracy. This podcast is the contribution in the debate by the Director of Structural Reform and Competitiveness of the European Commission Directorate of Economic and Financial Affairs, Anne Boucher. She will present the process of reform that the EU is going through as a consequence of the existing imbalances within the EU, and that a common currency entails certain level of transfer of sovereignty from the member states.
I must say I've been a bit surprised by the title of competitiveness versus democracy. Because, I mean, as a citizen, I would like both. As an economist, I don't see the trade-off. So when I was thinking on how to get at this discussion, I think what might be useful is not to remind big principles and announce big threats of transfer of sovereignty and race to the bottom on wages and things like that, which are not the reality, but to highlight a bit what has happened since the euro came into force, yeah? And what has happened, and why is competitiveness an issue, and what are the different dimensions of competitiveness? And basically, when the Euro project was launched, it was acknowledged by the experts and by the politicians that the Euro area is not an optimal currency area. But there was this strong belief that it would trigger some further integration in the Euro area, and at the end would be for the prosperity of all and would really lead to more real convergence. And did that go wrong? What has happened when the euro started is that we have started to see big financial flows which have gone from the most prosperous part of the euro area towards the least prosperous parts, in form of bank lending, from banks from the north lending to banks from the south, if you want to make it more simple. All this is more financial integration. All this is good, in the sense that if you want to have more real convergence, you need to have capital flows, downhill capital from rich regions to poor regions. That is something we've been even highlighted by the World Bank as being successful, as being a convergence machine. What went wrong is where the money went ultimately. That means instead of going into productive investment to support the economy and generating exports which would make growth sustainable, it fueled a housing bubble in countries like Spain and Ireland. And these bank liquidities have been used, and households have borrowed money, have been over, massively. Prices of housing have gone up, and the construction sector in the economy in countries like Spain and Ireland has swollen. And the case in Greece and Portugal is slightly different because it is more the public deficit and the debt which have raised issues in a housing bubble. But when you have such a system which is not sustainable, and at some stage you get a highly leveraged financial sector, highly leveraged housing households, very high housing prices, then you just need a kind of confidence crisis on the financial market, and suddenly the capital flows stop. And that's what happened. And that's what created the crisis. So in this, then I'm not going to go into the details on how we responded to the crisis, how we strengthened governance, what kind of tools we have put in place. I think one of the things which is quite important to have in mind, and it's even confirmed if you look at the polls now or were there quite a lot of your scepticism and people thinking they have lost their hopes in Europe and so on? There's a complete unanimity for the Euro project still. And at the time when the crisis started, there were big speculations on the fact that the euro area would disintegrate, and the policymakers have made everything to strengthen the euro area, and they have committed recently to strengthen the economic and monetary union, and they have committed to a medium-term roadmap which has several milestones. All of them are not relevant here today. And I think one of the important things, which was part of the acknowledged weaknesses of the euro area, was the lack of banking union, and it is what is very high on the agenda now. And it's in fact even the most the expected outcome of this European Council. On the issue of competitiveness and why we might go towards more governance related to competitiveness, I mean, basically what has happened is the fact that there is this feeling that it's very difficult to carry, reform is very costly, and this the reform has not followed the pace of changes. And when you think of what I have described as a mechanism, what has happened is that when there was these positive developments with massive liquidity from the banks, I mean, the governments, which were in the in some parts of the euro area, have stopped reform, basically. And what you see in the process is that in the whole chain, that the wages in particular in the sectors which are not open to international competition have increased far beyond productivity, and it's been shown on the graph of Ronald. And that what you see in these economies is that basically there has been the domestic economy was so buoyant that they stopped looking for export markets while international competition was fierce with emerging economies with enlargement and so on. So they lost market shares more than the rest of the European countries. Imports have started to increase quite a lot, and there has been external deficits which have reached unsustainable levels. Yeah? So by not reforming, the problem became unsustainable. And what has been done in the framework of the strength and governance is to say we should not let this happen. When things go well, we have to make sure that the kind of medium-term sustainability and improvement of the economy is still on the agenda of the governments. And that's that. So it's not that we're defining that wages should adjust whatever happens and should go downward whatever happens. It is to ensure that the concern on competitiveness is on the agenda of the policymakers. Because structural reform, and it's a term you might want to define, is something which is difficult to carry out. It has a lot, you have to go a lot against a lot of vested interest, but if you don't do it with medium-term objectives, then it gets very painful. And it's exactly what some countries are experiencing now. So the main point is to ensure that reforms take place at national level. How you do that? I mean, there has been some strengthening of this type of governance through what is called the six-pack, and the fact that you do not look only at the excessive deficits but in the country, but you look also at other aspects like the level of debt, of private debt in the economy, not only public debt, but also debt by households, debt by companies. This is not like the public deficit where we have rules. I mean, it's just follow up a number of indicators and make analyses to have a coordination of policies at European level. And the competitiveness, I mean, these contractual arrangements which are now discussed by the member states, it's only one step further in the process, in the sense that every year the Commission makes recommendation, and I insist it's recommendation to the national level, so national governments have to take that and put that in the national debate. It is not instructions. they make recommendations. These recommendations could be the basis for a contract between the member state and within the council. Again, it is not technocrats from the commission deciding what to do. It is the other ministers of the member state and the heads of state which agree between themselves that they would consider that this type of reform or this type of reform should have priority. What is also proposed, and I mean on this the Commission said, I mean if we go in that direction of having this type of contractual arrangement, it's fundamental that it is linked to some financial incentives. And so there could be some financial support to mitigate the cost of the reform or to support some aspects of the reform. What is right now, I mean, the idea is, if you look at the blueprint of the Commission on deepening MU, is that this type of financial support could be very small at the beginning. If you think of the difficulties we have had to close the discussions on the EU budget, you can't say that we can start tomorrow by talking of huge amounts to pull together. But we could start with something small, and over time it could develop in a kind of fiscal capacity for the euro area, a bit like you have a federal budget. Yeah? So that's the idea which is on the table. Why, I mean, is it still open for discussion? It's open for discussion because it is hugely complex on how you want to implement this, and there are quite a lot of technicalities which would need to be worked out and options which would need to be looked at. I mean, I don't want to go into the details of the discussion because it could become very, very bureaucratic in a way, but I mean, one thing is to say, is it only the euro area members who should sign the contract? Is it also the other member states should have an option? Is the contract compulsory or not? How do you organize the financial incentives? Will that be part of the EU budget, structural funds type? Is it a blank check? Is it something coming with conditionality? All this is open for discussion. So if it's not happening, this was proposed last December. If it's not happening in June, we might be a bit disappointed because it's not going fast. But I mean, you have to realize the type of changes to agree on this at 27. I've got 2 minutes left, and I wanted to come back also on some aspect of democracy. Because that was the other topic, and I think if I speak only on competitiveness, you will consider I'm too biased. I mean, on the democratic level, in the governance, as I said, the types of things we're doing now are recommendations. This has to be brought at the national level. And member states, I mean, and the debate on political economies is entirely entrained in the democratic and parliamentary processes. The budget, the discussions on the wages or the competence in the labour market in general of the social partners, but the debate has to take place. It's quite important at some stage, if some member states decide to share a currency, that they declare a couple of elements which are of common concerns, and that they then therefore that the society organises itself to take into account what the others do. If we have for the euro area an objective of inflation which is 2%, this has to be in the mind of all the people who belong to the euro area. It's not a technocratic decision. It is something which has been defined as a framework for the economy and the functioning of the euro area. So, I mean, for me, it's quite important not to see a transfer of sovereignty and start looking at all elements which are seen as a transfer of sovereignty, but to realize that having a common currency is to have put a number of concerns and interests together and therefore requires coordinated action. And that's why you have these decisions which are taken at the level of the council, again not by the commission, we do not have decision powers on this. And indeed, when we look at the future of the democratic process, what we think is that if we would go further in integration, like for instance having a fiscal capacity for the euro area, you would need to have the European Parliament to have scrutiny, more scrutiny than it has now on the euro area affairs. And what you also would need is more interaction between the national levels and the between national parliaments and European parliaments. You know. So, I mean, that's the vision. I mean, there's a need to strengthen the democratic process as if we move towards more integration. But to say that what has happened is not entering in the democratic process is, I think, a big, big shortcut, and it's not reflecting the discussions which are going on. Thank you.
Thank you for that.